Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everybody. Thanks for tuning in. And I'm your host, John Kuzma, as always. This is End Zone Blogs Across the Middle. And we got a lot of great pro football content we're going to talk about tonight. First things first, on our ticker, we're going to talk about Aaron Rodgers coming back. I don't know if you guys are sure or have heard today, but Aaron Rodgers has started practicing again, and this has to be a concern if you're a Packers fan. I know everybody's ecstatic, and I know everybody's happy to see him out there and having such a smooth recovery, but the fact remains that the Dallas Cowboys were in a similar situation in 2015. It was week two. Tony Romo goes down with a broken collarbone. He comes back for week 12 in that same year, and he breaks his collarbone again, which brings us to the next point. Some of these teams and some of these team doctors, they don't care about their athletes like they should. I mean, if I was the person that was doing the medical checkups and running all the tests, I would make sure that all my players were 100% healed before they stepped back on the field. Now, I know it's football and nobody's really 100% healed, but I'm talking about a major injury such as, you know, like a broken collarbone or a messed up shoulder, you know, especially for a quarterback, you know. And as good as Rodgers has been, a future franchise quarterback, there's just no point to rush him back. You need this guy for the season. You need this guy for next season. You need this guy healthy next year. And why even put, you know, the following season in jeopardy, because you want to make a run back or make Rodgers come back so you guys can make a run this year, when truthfully I don't think the Green Bay Packers are Super Bowl contenders right now. You know, the Vikings are clearly the best team in the NFC North. I think Detroit can hang toe-to-toe with Green Bay. And it just doesn't seem like there's a lot to gain there. I don't think Rodgers is coming back, and if he does come back, I don't think they're winning the Super Bowl, is what I meant to say. So it just doesn't make sense to me to go all in, rush him back for the end of the season or the playoffs, potentially risk getting hurt again, and then having his recovery take longer into the off season or longer into the following season. Moving on, we're going to talk about Alvin Kamara. He's been pretty spectacular for the New Orleans Saints. I think he's got 5 rushing touchdowns and 4 receiving touchdowns, so he's getting it done in both phases of the game. He's the epitome of a dual threat running back in today's game. And the Saints' offense is such a vertical passing attack and an overall aerial attack that Kamara just fits greatly into what they're trying to do down there in the Big Easy. With Breeze being in shotgun so much, it opens up those lanes, and Kamara works well in space. You know, this guy is a swing pass and a screenplay wizard with the ball in his hands. He's the ideal guy you want to get the ball in space to. And it's been just such a great ride to watch Kamara do what he's been able to do over his rookie season. You know, now Mark Ingram's a great player down there. He's the lead back, and Alvin Kamara is actually spelling him, which means he's his backup. That's a fancy term we use in the NFL. It's called spell. It just means backup running back. So to have those two going as a 1-2 punch, and then Ingram wears down the defense, and then when the defense is tired, you have Alvin Kamara come in there and just wreak havoc on a tired defense. That's just been a big formula for success for this football team. We're talking about a team that at one point was, I think, on an 8-game winning streak. You know, and I don't know if you went back the last 3 or 4 years, the Saints were pretty bad. So Kamara's been a big reason this team has been able to turn it around. And there's a reason this guy is also starting to get some offensive rookie of the year hype. You know, you got guys like Kareem Hunt, Leonard Fournette, and even though I don't think Deshaun Watson will win it because he got hurt, Kamara is rising up those charts very fast because he's turning a lot of heads on the football field, and he's just a very dynamic football player overall. So I don't know if he'll be able to pass Kareem Hunt. Kareem Hunt has been absolutely amazing. You know, he went for how many yards? 100 yards straight. So that was pretty spectacular. Leonard Fournette, I just read some next-gen stats information. Nobody in the NFL is faster than Leonard Fournette on game day. Now, keep in mind, players have 20 pounds of pads on them. So it's all about who can carry that 20 pounds well. And even though guys like Marquise Goodwin and Tyreek Hill are faster without pads, like 40-yard dash time-wise, when pads come on, nobody's faster than Fournette. I think he was like around 22 miles per hour he was running. So, you know, it's going to be tough to come back up and pass those two guys for Kamara. But the fact that this guy, you know, I think he was drafted in the third round, even is overachieving this much to the point where, like, we're talking about Kamara taking away the NFC Rookie Player of the Year from the NFL Rookie Player of the Year, I should say, from Hunt and Fournette is just such a huge testament to the playmaking abilities that Alvin Kamara has. This guy has been special, he's been electrifying, and he's definitely becoming a fan favorite because we just ran an article the other day on endzoneblog.com and people were just soaking that thing up. So New Orleans has an emerging star in Alvin Kamara. You know, I don't think they're going to bench Mark Ingram for him, but right now they have a great tandem, and, you know, that's a great compliment to the Saints scouting department. They understood that this guy, Tennessee, has a lot of potential, more so than what the other scouts were saying he had, and they took a risk on him, and obviously it's panned out for them. So moving on, we're going to talk about the Giants situation. Everybody's talked about, you know, Eli Manning this past week and how he's been screwed over, and he has, you know, for everything he's given that organization, 2 Super Bowls, just all those years of the helm and being under all that pressure of the New York media and guiding a team in the biggest market in maybe the world, you know, and he continuously showed up and went above expectations. So to treat Eli like they did was a very unfortunate situation. Now, moving on from Eli, because we've all already talked about that, let's talk about the page being turned. Let's talk about Geno Smith. Let's talk about Davis Webb. Now, Geno Smith is the guy that they plan on starting in New York. And while Geno has been better, you know, he was a little bit better in the preseason. He looked sharper. The problem, the knock on Geno Smith has always been the fact that he will turn the ball over at maybe the worst possible time. You know, things might be going good for Geno in the first, second, third quarter, where he keeps the game close, and then in the fourth quarter he might throw a couple pick sixes to the house, and then the whole game unravels. Well, we're going to find out if Geno Smith is that guy still this weekend, and we're going to find out if maybe he has grown and, you know, progressed beyond that. If you are a betting man, it's hard to bet with Geno Smith off his past track record. He struggled a little bit, but that doesn't mean that you're going to struggle forever. People do develop. People do get better. Every rep in practice throughout a season elevates a player, even if he's not the starter, even if he's taking reps with the number twos. He's still getting in work at the NFL level. He's still adjusting to the speed of the game. He's still learning how to read and recognize defenses. He's still becoming more aware about coverages and things like that. So Geno Smith has to take all that learning that he's went through over the course of his career with the Jets, now with the Giants, and try to manifest that into something positive on the football field. Now, it's not going to be easy. I think deep down New York believes Davis Webb is a more suitable successor for Eli Manning than Geno Smith. I just think that Jerry Reese and Ben McAdoo are more comfortable thrusting Geno Smith into the fire right now because they want to baby their rookie quarterback. And that's understandable. You know, Aaron Rodgers sat for a little bit of time, you know, behind Brett Favre, and obviously that worked out for him. So we do know that sitting on the sidelines, holding in the clipboard and, you know, learning the game from someone else who's leading the pack can work for a backup quarterback. So as far as Davis Webb goes, at some point they said they're going to try to get him in the mix too just to see what he has. But to me, if I was running the New York Giants, I personally probably would have threw Davis Webb into the fire from game one because based off my past assessments, I find it very hard to believe that Geno Smith is going to be the guy in the National Football League. I admit he's got better, and I would take him as a backup quarterback. But as a number one, I just think with all the pressure on and handling all that responsibility, it's going to be a little too much for Geno. It's just always been that way over the course of his whole career. Nothing personal against the dude. It's just football. And, you know, Davis Webb, he had some promise coming out. I think he came out of Cal. I'm not sure. Don't quote me on that. It's been a while since I've done any research on Davis Webb. But and he just seems like more of a player that could give the New York Giants something as time goes on. And if you give him some time to develop now where there's not as much pressure when the Giants are struggling and there's really nothing in the future for this football team, it's honestly the perfect time to let Davis Webb take his lumps and learn the game. You know, you don't want to put this kid in when the Giants are 8-2 and, you know, there's the playoffs potentially looming down the road, because then the pressure is just way too high. And if things blow up in your face, people are going to say, well, you screwed our season because you put in Davis Webb, who's a rookie quarterback. They're not going to have that right now in New York. The sky is already falling for the Giants. That thing has unraveled. We all know that. It's been an embarrassment every step of the way. I don't think Ben McAdoo makes it through this offseason. And a lot of guys in that locker room are disgruntled right now. So there's really not too much further below the point they're at that they take it right now. So why not risk it, you know? Now is actually the perfect time. So we'll see if the Giants make the right decision, or we'll see if they try to make Geno their guy. I don't know what happens. You know, it's an interesting thing to keep an eye on. Moving on to another NFC East team, we're going to talk about the Dallas Cowboys. The Dallas Cowboys have kept their season alive by beating the Washington Redskins on Thursday Night Football. It was a big win for Dallas because if Dallas lost, their season was essentially over. The Cowboys entered the game 5-6, and now the Cowboys are 6-6, obviously, with the win, and they have a chance to win out the rest of the season and maybe get to the playoffs. Now, it's a stretch, you know. Winning 4 straight games in the NFL is very tough to do. The competition's so high. Everybody's gunning for the Dallas Cowboys because they have a $1 billion stadium and a $1 billion practice facility, and they're an American team, and you'd be surprised how many people love the Cowboys. As far as ratings go, the Cowboys drive the ratings. As far as merchandise goes, the Cowboys are mopping up. So everybody brings their best out when they play the Cowboys. because they have a target on their back just from their prestige, just because everybody thinks they're privileged and things of that nature. So, you know, the Redskins gave all they had, but really what I saw from watching that game is Dallas's defensive line played inspired football, and they just were all over Kirk Cousins. I'm talking about guys like DeMarcus Lawrence, who leads the league with 13.5 sacks, I believe it is now. You had Taco Charlton make a good play. All those guys up front for that defensive line were getting after it and just stirring things up. And the Redskins, really, you know, they didn't put anything together. There's a lot of good players, like Chris Thompson wasn't on the field for the Redskins. And, you know, Pryor, the Redskins really haven't got a lot out of Pryor. I don't even think he's even playing right now. I'm pretty sure he's hurt. But overall, there just wasn't enough there. I mean, Cousins at times looked great in that game, extending plays. I don't know if you guys seen that play that was like a fadeaway. He was fading away, threw off his back foot. I think he hit Crowder, who turned upfield and made it a big play. But, I mean, you can't question Kirk Cousins' will to win. And the fact that they haven't signed that guy is pretty absurd to me, too, at least for the long term. I know they franchise tagged him a few times. But you got to give that guy a long-term contract and build around him. He's doing everything he can to keep Washington alive, and they're just kind of being ungrateful for everything he's done to them. Now, the Redskins are fading fast. They just haven't been able to put it together since winning the division a couple years back. And, you know, the NFC East is so competitive that the top teams switch so often. I don't know if you remember, Eagles were, I think, last in the NFC East last year. Now the Eagles are the best team in all football. So the Cowboys, as far as the Cowboys are concerned, to win that game without Ezekiel Elliott, to keep their season alive, it's pretty big for them. You know, they have a tough stretch ahead, you know, to win out to get in. It doesn't look like Dallas will be able to do it this year, but you never know. And you have to give this team credit for just keeping the dream alive, you know, keeping Jerry Jones' dream alive. The idea that maybe they can go 4-0 down the stretch and get back, that's good enough for them, especially after all the nightmares they had to deal with off the field and all the problems that Roger Goodell has caused to the Dallas Cowboys. Moving on, I want to talk about the Detroit Lions and the Baltimore Ravens. The playoffs started today. The Baltimore Ravens would be in. The Detroit Lions are one spot out, maybe two spots out. I think Seattle's the first spot out, and the Lions are the second spot out. So I think six teams getting in the playoffs, that would mean Seattle's the seventh seed, Detroit's the eighth seed. Okay, the last spot right now is being occupied by the Atlanta Falcons. Okay, the Atlanta Falcons have been hot lately. I don't know if you've seen Julio Jones went off to like over 200 yards or something like that last game. He was snapping on everybody. Atlanta's starting to find their stride. You know, they were struggling out the gate a little bit this year. Now they're starting to find their offensive stride. You know, Steve Sarkisian calling the plays over there. Kyle Shanahan left from last team, so they had that transition era they were going through. But things are finally starting to hit the ground running, I guess you can say. And Atlanta, it's going to be tough for them to stumble because they're just hitting their groove at the right time. And that puts Seattle and Detroit in a very tough situation. They both have to win out too and hope Atlanta stumbles or some other team stumbles and falls out of the NFC playoff picture. Now, it's very possible one of those teams that are in could go 0-4 or, 0-5 because they got to play this weekend over those next five games, lose out, and Detroit or Seattle or someone else could be in. The thing is, as far as Detroit and Baltimore go, both of these teams need this win so bad because if the Ravens lose, they'll probably be the 7th seed instead of the 6th seed, what they are now. And that makes this game such a great matchup. The Lions have to give everything they have, no holds bars, throw everything and the kitchen sink at the Ravens, and somehow pull this win out. I don't believe Seattle's going to win this weekend. I think Seattle plays Philadelphia. I don't, with all the injuries Seattle has to Sherman, Chancellor's banged up. There's offensive line injuries. I don't think Seattle's going to beat Philadelphia. Philly's been so good all year. They've pretty much steamrolled everybody. Carson Wentz looks like the MVP. There just doesn't seem to be any stopping that team. They acquired Jay Ajayi to bolster the roster a little bit. It just doesn't feel like Seattle is going to be able to pull one out against Philly. So that opens the door for Detroit. You know, Detroit has to knock off a good, not a great team, but a good team, the Ravens. I think they have the same record as Detroit, which is 6-5. Don't quote me, but I'm pretty sure 6-5. Ravens are also, you know, vying for that playoff spot. So they're going to be looking at it the same way as Detroit is. They're going to pull out all the stops. They're going to do everything they can to shut down Matthew Stafford, shut down that offense. And if one thing that needs to happen, obviously, is for Detroit, they have to let Matthew Stafford operate from the pocket. Detroit's offensive line has to gel and play their best against the Ravens to keep these playoff hopes alive. And one great feather in the Lions' cap is the fact that Taylor Decker is back, because that guy was sensational last year, and he's going to do everything he can to protect Stafford this weekend and going forward. So Detroit, I believe they can get this done and make this happen, but at the same time, John Harbaugh and the Ravens are never a cakewalk, never. He's a Harbaugh. We all know those guys are phenomenal football coaches. And if the Ravens were supposed to be dead, they would have died a long time ago. And they're the exact opposite. They've been battling back. They're actually starting to trend upward. I believe the Lions are starting to trend upward a little bit too. So it makes for a lot of fireworks this weekend. Joe Flacco needs to have a big game if Baltimore is going to win. And really, that's the key matchup there, Flacco versus Stafford. Now, I think Stafford's the better player. I'm biased. I'm from Detroit. I've grown up. The reason I love football is because I went to a Lions versus Minnesota Vikings game on Thanksgiving Day at the Pontiac Silverdome when I was a little kid, and I saw Barry Sanders rush for over 100 yards, and I think a couple touchdowns. That was the inspiration of the love of football for me. So, obviously, I'm a little partial towards the Lions, but I really even believe, without me being a homer to Detroit, that Stafford is a better quarterback than Flacco is. Now, I know Flacco has a Super Bowl playing with a very talented defensive cast, but Stafford can air it out more, and if he gets the protection up front from that Detroit offensive line, if they come to play, they earth maul people. And one other thing, the Lions need to get a 100-yard rusher. It's been forever, I think, since this happened. Don't be afraid to trust Theo Riddick. I don't know if you've watched any Lions games, but when Theo Riddick takes handoffs, he usually makes that first guy miss with a wicked spin move. And as much as I love Amir Abdullah, Theo Riddick is a gamer too. Trust both those backs to get it done. And that should take a little pressure off Stafford. But ultimately, Matthew Stafford has to go for 3 touchdowns, 300 yards. Don't leave it up to chance with this team, and do everything they can to edge out the win. I know I'm mainly pro football, but I actually have on my TV in the background right now Georgia and Auburn going head-to-head. And while it looks like Georgia's going to win, so it's not going to matter anyway. I was kind of surprised by the fact that Auburn was going to get in over Alabama, even though Auburn had 2 losses. That was if Auburn won tonight. Obviously, it doesn't look like they're going to win tonight. It looks like Georgia's going to win. Alabama's going to be in it anyway. But the fact that they were going to put Auburn in with two losses over Alabama with one loss kind of irks me a little bit. There's no way Alabama can't be in this playoff. It's not a college football playoff unless you have Nick Saban and Alabama in the mix. So, to me, that was a little bit absurd, but obviously the football gods seen that anyway. Auburn's taking a loss to Georgia tonight. I mean, there's still, I think, 12 minutes left. It's commercial right now. But that's the way it should be. Nick Saban and Alabama have to be in the college football playoffs. It's not a Final Four unless that happens. And there's no way Alabama isn't one of the best four teams in the country. Yeah, they took that loss to Auburn in the Iron Bowl, but that's football sometimes. And as a coach, you don't aim to go undefeated. Obviously, everybody wants to go undefeated, but you aim to just be the best possible team you can be. And with Alabama with only one loss, they have to be one of the best four teams in the nation. That's the bottom line. I'm about to wrap up the show. I only have 3 minutes or 3 minutes left of airtime. It's been a great half hour for the very first End Zone Blogs Across the Middle radio show. I'm your host, John Kuzma, as always. Next week, I'm going to take in some callers. We're going to be on every Saturday night. I think I'm going to be the 6:30 time slot. If anybody wants to call in, you can find me on Twitter at StillFly810, or you can look, that's my personal account, or you can follow the endzoneblog.com's Twitter account, which is at endzoneblog_. Obviously, make sure you go check out endzoneblog.com as much as you can, too. Every day we have articles surrounding the NFL and what's going on, all the latest buzz and things like that. I usually write 2 articles a day, Monday through Sunday. On Wednesdays and Saturdays, I usually write 1 article. And from now on Saturday nights, we have this radio show. And on Wednesday nights, I'm actually doing a show called Step Your Game Up on YouTube, which is like a video show. All that's brought to you by endzoneblog.com. Thank you to all the readers and everybody who's empowered us along the way and gave us support. It's been a great journey so far. And just go check out the website and, read a couple articles, stay in the loop about the NFL. And don't be afraid to interact with me on Twitter, ask me any questions about maybe fantasy or anything like that. I enjoy talking about the sport. It's what I'm most passionate about. I was a coach before I started getting into sports media. I coached at semi-pro level, the high school varsity level, and the Pee Wee level. At one point in Michigan, I was coaching 2 seasons a year, semi-pro in the spring, and high school in the fall. So I'm doing everything I can to up my game constantly as far as football goes. And really, the sports media side of things has been a blessing to meet so many cool people, to interact with people like that were my heroes growing up. It's been truly a remarkable experience. And one other thing, in all my articles, I always attach a foreword to a specific charity. Make sure you go out there, check out those charities, find something you can get behind and try to help out a little bit. There's a lot of people suffering in the world today. There's a lot of heartache in the world today. Let's try to use our platform to help those people out the best of our abilities. I appreciate everyone's time tonight. That's all we have for endzoneblog.com, Spurs Across the Middle radio show. Have a great night, and thank you. God bless.